It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champy's Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. We are live from Champions on Baxter. We have a special guest for you this week, Russ Tanner, former UGA lineman from one of the best offensive lines that I've ever seen in real life. I'm Roddy Nabulsi, joined by Jake Roos, and we have a hell of a show for you tonight. For those of you watching on Facebook at the 11livesports.com, please be sure to like the 11 Alive little page there. 11 Live Sports lets us on their show, and we had a lot of people watching the show.
Yeah, I saw
despite
one earlier.
You being on.
I'm not going to lie, Roddy. When you asked me to come, I was a little skeptical. But I looked at some of the videos. A lot of folks watching, man.
You get 20,000 people watching this. That's pretty impressive. And again, that all comes from 11 Live Sports. So for the love of Pete, please be sure to hit the like on their page, and we thank them very much for letting us do that.
Someone asks, who's the kid with the backward hat? I shaved my beard this week. It got a little out of control.
Now he's butt chin for until it grows back out.
It'll be soon, I'm sure. We got a Sounds Good from Paul Meharry. So, yeah, thank you guys for tuning in this evening.
Okay, I'm going to just jump right into the bat. You actually got to see a Georgia practice. And now we need to know every play they ran, every formation that you saw.
Pull out the notebook.
Yeah.
Start rolling them off.
Well, I mean, I took notes on my phone with Kirby there. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
It was for all the what you guys get to grumble about not being able to go to practice, one thing I'll give Kirby a lot of credit for is actually really good to the Letterman. Yeah. Lets us come. No real questions about it, as long as everybody's cool and you don't have your phone out, tweeting and doing a little Instagram or Snapchatting some formation. So, it was good to go see him. To me, I'm sitting there thinking, golly, why couldn't I play with an indoor facility?
Yeah.
It's like 78 degrees inside and they're just enjoying the day.
Yeah, because you showed up on the day that
they were inside.
They were inside.
Yeah.
I don't even think it rained that day, but they had been outside for like 4 days. It was supposed to rain later on.
It was supposed to rain, yeah.
And they went and today it was actually drizzling, and Kirby stayed in it.
Yeah.
And I had some people when I mentioned the fact that, look, as much as anybody wants to hate on Greg McGarrity and take shots at the Athletic Association, today when we were at practice, we were there for periods 2 and 3.
Yep.
It starts raining as we walk off the field, and it's a drizzle. But all they had to do was, walk 10 yards into one of the nicest facilities in the nation. And we went to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And we were in the Colts training facility.
This was superior.
This is completely a dump compared to what's at Georgia.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it's really an awesome place. And, just to be there, some of my guys, we all joke, they're soft. They need to be out there sweating their off. But, the way it's all going now, as much of a business as college football is, the name of the game is keeping your guys healthy as long as possible.
Sure.
When you got the horses in the stable that, Kirby and those guys are bringing in right now, you want to keep those guys healthy because, as we all know, college football so much is a battle of attrition.
Yeah.
It seemed like even 12, 15 years ago when I was playing, which is not that long ago, the mindset at practice was grind them, grind them, grind them. Let's make practice as hard as possible so the games are easy. And that's just not the case anymore. It's run much is what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
It's run much more like the NFL is, where it's a business. You show up, you learn your things, you take care of your body, you prepare, and then you try to roll when the season comes in.
Sure.
So, it was clicking, it was fast. And that indoor facility, like you guys said, it is stinking unbelievable.
To support your point about Kirby Smart running it like a business, he said at one of the press conferences, you saw the guys wearing little GPS trackers on their back.
Yes.
He says, yeah, we're trying to keep those guys like Lorenzo Carter from running more than 6,000 to 7,000 yards
in a practice.
Practice.
And why? Injuries.
Exactly.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
When guys get tired, that's when you get hurt.
Absolutely.
So they're just not doing that anymore. They're trying to keep the guys fresh, keeping their legs on. There's no point in burning a kid out on August the 8th.
Right.
But within reason, because you remember during the Mark Richt era, they tried to get – remember he had that philosophy, this year we're going to go soft. We're going to do thud. We're not going to tackle to the ground. And they went – he said we want to get all our horses to the starting gate.
That must have been after I left.
It was after you left.
Because Callaway and Van Gorder were not playing.
No, it was towards the end. And then for like the first four games, the defense was just getting ripped apart.
Soft, yeah.
It was soft. And, because they weren't tackling to the ground. And the next year he said no. And then they instituted those, Terrible Tuesdays or Bloody Tuesdays.
Yeah.
To say, look, well, we have to tackle to the ground and get ugly again.
But that's the thing. We already said it, we've said it twice in the first 2 or 3 minutes we've been talking. Kirby runs it like a business.
Yeah.
If you show up, you do your job, you execute. And as much as we like to fuss and say, oh, this is Alabama Light trying to be like Saban was, guess what, boys? No reason to reinvent that wheel. I mean, the man's kind of got it figured out in Tuscaloosa.
If you know how to do it. We got a question for you from Andrew Kreider. He says, coming from an experienced offensive lineman, I guess that's him.
Yeah, no, I would assume. Okay. I would assume.
Experienced, old, same difference.
Do you see this year's offensive line making stride in terms of making a push in the running game? And we see that all the time. People are like, well, Georgia can't get a push up front.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's always true because sometimes you're putting a hat on a hat.
Right.
And you're not supposed to get a push.
Well.
So please kind of break that down for us because there's a lot of misconceptions about right. the offensive line. I'm not saying Andrew has one.
Yeah.
Please answer his question. But then go into what constitutes success for the offensive line.
Right. So I think the thing you start thinking about push, the only time you really worry about a lot of push with offensive line is in that short yard situation where everybody, including Jake Roos, knows we're about to run the football.
Yeah.
You know? Which Kirby said, hey, there are in 33% of Georgia's SEC games, we have to be able to run the ball when everybody knows it. So you're saying the exact same thing Kirby did, what,
yeah,
Monday?
Absolutely, yeah.
But so much of what happens on the offensive line gets into execution and scheme. You know, and last year, and it wasn't all – people like to get on the offensive line about, oh, my gosh, we're not moving the ball, we're not running it. Boys, I'm going to let you know right now. In the SEC, if there's 8 people with different colored jerseys on standing within 4 yards of the line of scrimmage, you're not going to run it very long. There's 5 offensive linemen. And I know we want those guys to be superhuman and do crazy things, but the fact of the matter is you can block the 5 that you can block. And until the passing game starts stretching those guys out a little bit, it all works together. I mean, Eason, the receiver's going to get downfield. The tight ends have to help the back. It's all together. You can't just look at the offensive line and say, they're the reason we can't run the ball. Now, some of it is scheme. Some of it's not knowing what to do. Some of it is just mashing because there were times last year where we saw guys on the offensive line. You know, we're not trying to speak bad of my boys because I got it handed to me plenty, but they got manhandled some up front. They would try to engage at line scrimmage and go backwards. Now, I forgot my man's
Andrew
name.
Kreider.
So, to my man Andrew's point, hopefully that's not what we're going to see as much this year, to where at the point of contact, when you lock on and engage, instead of, you know, pushing the ball backwards, you get pushed into the backfield. Right. Penetration is a killer of the running game.
No doubt.
So if the defensive line gets in the backfield, it's over. So hopefully that's going to be some of what we don't see as much.
So what we need to see is less penetration into the backfield.
Yes.
But just because you don't see them pushing guys forward doesn't mean they're not doing their jobs.
That's correct.
Because this was a thing for me. I would talk to some of the offensive linemen last year. I mean, remember Tyler Catalina just got destroyed by people
in
the press.
People were giving him hell.
I talked to Greg Pike, and Greg's like, you know, people are crapping on us, and it's not fair.
Yeah.
Brandon Cablano, very short temper there. He used some very colorful language for fans that were making fun of the offensive line. He's like, look, when we grade out, you know, that Sunday when they're watching practice, I mean, watching
that's
the
tape.
And he's like, you know, we're making, they had some club,
like the winners club or whatever.
Champions. Champions club.
I don't know what they call it, but sure.
Yeah, but something like that, where everybody had done their job.
Yeah.
But the play still didn't gain.
Right.
You know, so.
But the offensive line was not great last year.
No, it was not. I'm not saying they were. But sometimes they were doing their job and still got blamed for it.
Yeah, that's true. But there wasn't a lot of – the thing you didn't see much from them that you want to see is you didn't see a whole lot of gaping holes where somebody just absolutely dominated another kid.
Yeah, right, right.
You want to see some of that.
Well, and I want to ask you too, Russ, one of the big questions that we keep getting a lot this year and leading into this season is a lot of people are wary about Isaiah Wynn taking over that left tackle spot. This is a guy who has spent his whole career at guard. Most people believe that's probably at the next level what he'll play.
Yeah.
You know, he's 6'3", I think he's 305 right now. He's small. He's on the smaller end of SEC left tackles is what people think. How much do you think that really matters?
I mean, it matters, but the kid's a baller. You know, out there the other day looking around talking to, you know, one of the fun things I got to do at practice, probably my most fun thing, is I got to see Bubba, Fernando Velasco.
Oh, yeah.
And Odell Thurman.
Sure.
Who's back on staff now.
I forgot that you knew those guys so well.
With them.
Yeah.
So seeing those guys was really special to me, hanging out talking. And I was just asking them about, and Bubba in particular, because he played a long time in the NFL. I asked him, like, hey, tell me about the offensive line. You know, what do you think about the guys here or there? You get to see them. And he's talking about when. He's like, that kid will fight. He'll fight.
Yeah.
He gets after it. I'm just telling you right now, he gets after it. And now, I think the size thing is blown out of proportion. Cause I saw him, and Isaiah Wynn is a big sucker. You know, looking at him like,
he's not
this
midget,
is the small one.
But people, but people are used to that 6'6".
He's not the long arm, 6'7",
right.
330-pound Tony Baselli, Orlando Pace type guy. but he knows what the heck he's doing. He's great with technique, and he's tough as nails. You know, I'll take that. You're not going to have the prototypes all the way across the line, and sometimes you need the kid who'll scrap and fight. And just quite honestly, his production has spoken for itself. He's played at a really high level. So.
Well, and I was going to ask you that too. The fact that he is the most experienced lineman that Georgia has, how big is that to have that guy sitting at your left tackle spot being able to, you know, kind of run things, you know, be the guy, the key point guy?
I'm sure number 10 appreciates it. You know, because you don't want any freaking lookout blocks coming over there. You know, look out! Jake Fromm. You're up, kid. He's like, you sure? Put Ramsey in. You know, you want a guy who's knowing what the heck he's doing.
Sure.
I mean, if you don't screw it up, you know, he's going to be all right.
Yeah, yeah,
now,
absolutely.
Would you feel comfortable putting one of the younger guys next to him? Because we saw that, you know, Andrew Thomas has been talked about a lot. And, you know, Coach Smart said today he's not ready. Again, day 8 of practice for him. But, you know, some of these younger guys come along, you know, Justin Schaefer, Natori Johnson. You might need them at the right side. But if you put him in at left guard, they've got Isaiah right there. Now, so how much does – I mean, can you talk while you're up there without somebody kind of overhearing you?
Well,
what's going on?
You know, whatever. Let them overhear. Defensive linemen are dumb. They don't get it. But, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you would rather just talk out loud what you're doing and know what the heck to do than to get up there and be quiet and try to be
I'm thinking in a stadium with, so, you know, 90,000 people screaming.
It makes it harder.
I bet.
But it helps. Being beside those experienced guys is, you don't want two freshmen beside each other.
Sure.
You know, and if it's on that left side, if it ends up being, you know, Thomas or Schaefer, whoever, and they're between Wynn and then Galliard, who's got a year under his belt.
That's where you want the kid to
play who doesn't have the experience to do it. If they've got the physical talent and they've got a little bit of dog in them they want to, all right, put them out there.
Well, that's my point because we thought, you know, who's going to be that right tackle? You're replacing him as well. You know, you put DeMarcus Hayes out there. He does have experience coming from JUCO, but, you know, again, he hasn't been in the system a year like some of the other guys have.
Sure.
So it seems to me, you know, maybe your Pat Allen or Solomon Kinley winds up playing right guard.
Yeah.
You know, you have a freshman tackle out there or a JUCO tackle out there or, you know, Dyshon Sims is out there. And so my point is I'm thinking one of your more new guys goes in at left guard. I think that might be the spot.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe. You know, it's funny. This time of year is where all of us fans, and I get to be a fan now.
Yeah.
You know, we all think that the freshmen are going to line up and be our safety and offensive line.
Well, you know, every freshman is going to play.
I'm actually going to stop you there because we got a question that goes right into exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
How tough is it for a freshman to hop in and get playing time on the offensive line?
It's the hardest position on the field to play as a freshman.
I agree with you.
The hardest position on the field to play. Because, one, the defensive linemen, the SEC, are grown freaking men. Okay.
Yeah.
They are some big, nasty dudes.
You look
dudes.
At Trenton Thompson and think about coming in as a freshman trying to stop him in practice.
What was the guy's name at Tennessee back in, like, the early 2000s? Henderson?
Remember
that guy?
Yeah.
I remember John Henderson. Was that him? Whatever.
Yeah, I know you're talking about.
The dude, he played a long time in the league. And I remember going up there as a redshirt freshman and see him thinking, his arms are the size of my thigh. And just like, if I line up against him, he literally will hurt me. So you get these guys who are grown men playing there. So you've got to be physically ready. And, you know, the physical strength, there's a lot of guys come in at position, the skill positions, that they're quick, they're fast, and they can compete as far as just pure speed. There's not many guys that can compete just pure strength in the trenches. And then the other part of it is, too, you can line a receiver up and say, all right, kid, run a post. Post translates to any level of football, right?
Right. Yeah.
My boys, U6 flag football team, we can run a post.
Yep.
You know, it goes all directions. So run a fly, go get it. It doesn't work like an offensive line. So just the mental part of it there. I mean, it's not just me blowing the horn for us here. The offensive line had to be some of the smartest guys on the field because you've got to know what to do every play, no matter what the defense lines up against it's hard.
I wanted to ask you, you know, you mentioned that being able to come in and go strength on strength and being able to win that battle. Do you think it's easy? Or what's more important for a young guy? Do you think it's more about strength or do you think it's more about technique?
Technique.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, technique. Now, if you're not strong enough, you'll get your butt handed to you.
Right,
you know? And it doesn't take very long before you realize, hey, coach, I better do some push-ups. pull me. You know, let's get back in the weight room.
I'm done.
I may be a good redshirt candidate. You know, it doesn't take long to figure that out. But technique is where it's at. And that's the thing. And maybe it's getting better on the high school level now, but usually you just don't see kids coming in with the technique and the skill, leverage, feet, hand placements. I mean, watch the guys. Most fans don't realize it, but watch the hands of the offensive linemen. Watch how fast they are, how precise they are, the good ones.
How they grab defensive players by the neck.
I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. I remember one time when we were there at Georgia, Jonas Jennings came out. He was in the league, I think, with the 49ers, somebody at the time. And he came out during, like, we were doing just summer drills. He was just getting some workouts in with us. And Pollock was out there. And Pollock was probably his junior year. So he was two-time All-American already. Yeah, I mean, he was the man, right? And Jonas Jennings comes out there and lines up. We're just out there running drills. And Jonas lines up against him, and Pollock comes out of a stance. And Jonas took his right hand. I will never forget it. And Pollock would tell you the same thing if he was here. Jonas took his right hand and hit Pollock so hard in his chest, put him flat on the ground. And it's just like.
Well, Jonas' hand is that big. It's a shovel. I mean, let's be fair.
But he learned the technique of what he was doing.
Okay. Yes.
And it was just, he knew how to put his hand, when to put it there, what to watch for. And that's something that just over time, going against great competition with really high-level coaching, you learn. Point is, not a lot of offensive linemen come in knowing the technique about how to handle a guy who may be physically better than they are.
Yeah, they've been counting on that brute strength for so long in high school. And I think that, you know, a lot of people talk about this debate between Isaiah Wilson and Andrew Thomas.
Yeah.
For a long time, I've made the argument that that's the argument that you're talking about. It's Isaiah Wilson has that brute, ridiculous strength, and he has just been able to throw people around. Andrew Thomas, I think, on the other hand, comes in with a lot cleaner technique, and I think that he's a guy that's why that puts him maybe a notch closer and why we see him at right tackle right now.
I'm going to tell you this. You got two cats that look like they're going to be playing for a long time.
I agree.
I mean, just
it may be beyond.
You know, I don't know how important the eyeball test is, but we've had plenty of times over the last few years at Georgia where the offensive line did not pass the eyeball test.
Yeah.
I don't know about this year, but next year, you know, we're gonna win a lot of games on paper before the season starts.
You saw Justin Schaefer out there.
Yeah.
We're just talking about guard. I mean, this guy,
he's big and nasty.
He's huge. You know, Torrey Johnson's no small fry by any means. And now you're looking at maybe bringing in a Jamari Sawyer, you know.
Sure, DeAndre Hill.
DeAndre Hill.
You got Warren Erickson, who is a giant man in his own regard. Owen Condon is 6'7", 305.
Yeah, so in other words, getting back to where you have to play your guards at tackle spots, I think that will be a thing of the past in the Kirby era. Araj has a good question for you. He says, Russ, when you played, who's the one guy on defense nobody wanted to battle or fight?
In practice,
yeah,
I'm assuming it's
well, Let's talk Georgia
battle,
only.
Maybe battle
Georgia,
or fight.
Georgia, and then maybe somebody in the league, in the conference.
Well, battle and fight are two different things. Because the guy nobody wanted to fight was Odell Thurman.
I bet
because Odell will hurt you.
Yeah,
like, he's a bad man.
He still is.
Yeah, he's a bad man. I saw him the other day. Love him. He's a good friend of mine, but he's a bad man.
Yeah.
As far as going up against him, I mean, you know, we were roommates. We talked about him once before, but Pollock is the best college defensive lineman I've ever personally witnessed. You could not block him one-on-one. You could not line up in a drill and beat him. He was just too good. So, you know, he was a guy nobody wanted to line up against for drills and practice.
Was there a guy in the conference that kind of struck your eye too? Or you think back and you're like, God, we're looking forward to that guy.
So two guys for me. One was Chad Lavallee at LSU.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
He was a freak. I lined up against Chad Lavallee, 6'3", 320. And he could, like, run. He's out there jogging with the linebackers and looking good. I was like, you know, I got him one play. He tripped, and I got on top of him. And I counted as a pancake. It's in the stat. I think I told him how bad I whooped him on that play. That was not a good plan. He took it out on me after that. And then South Carolina had a guy. His name was not Langston Hughes. That's another guy.
No. That's a poet from the 1960s.
Langston Moore was the guy's name.
Okay, Langston Moore.
He was number 57. He had the biggest thighs I've ever seen. And he was immovable. I mean, just ridiculously strong. So
when you start trying to cut a guy?
Yeah, you don't hit. Yeah.
I just come in low.
Ow. Bartley, you okay? My shoulder.
Right.
What happened?
Right.
I hit his leg.
Yeah, you speaking of shoulders, this was the guy on the you were on that crew where everybody's getting shoulder injuries. What was going on there between you and Inman and Roland and all those Nick
Josh
Jones?
Brock, Bartley Miller, Trey Chandler.
What were y'all doing to those guys?
I don't know. We weren't practicing indoors.
How many times have you heard of shoulder blade injuries?
Yeah, it's
they had like four on one team.
It's rare. It's rare this day and age.
Shoulder blade injuries. Why fighting? God, can I not? It's why fighting got cut out.
Yeah.
I think it was Quentin Moses or one of those guys. Big Dan broke his shoulder blade at practice when they fight.
That's, yeah.
So you know.
And they tried to tell us it happened during practice. He was hurt. I'm like, no, come on.
It happened during practice.
Technically, it was during the hours of practice. But that was just a crazy group.
Yeah, happens.
Talk to me real quick about getting a guys like that to gel. Because right now we're seeing all these guys move around.
Right.
And they talk about chemistry.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people, when the coaches are talking to the media and talking to the fans, you know, talking to the people here at Champions, you know, they'll say, you know, hand placements and technique. And it sounds kind of like coach speak, you know.
Right.
But you were telling us, look, you know, the hand placement does count. It is important. You know, talk to us about, I mean, is chemistry it really matter? Or can you just say, look, I got five great guys out there. Everybody does their job. We don't have chemistry.
No, it matters. No, it matters.
So it's not just coach speak.
No.
Because sometimes you hear it, you know.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, and, you know, we all know how the coaches like to talk and tell us stuff that means nothing.
Well, especially, and not a shot against Kirby, because we saw a problem with this last year, but every press conference, he mentions leadership.
Yeah.
And there have been times I'm like, you know, he's got a point here. But other times you hear leadership and you're like, oh, come on, coach.
Yeah.
We want to talk about plays. We want to talk about what's going on. And the coach wants to go on a 45-minute tirade about leadership. So talk to me a little bit about chemistry on the line.
Well, the place the chemistry on the line comes into play is in communication and then in making adjustments on the fly. So we were talking earlier about you getting to a loud stadium where you can't hear, and you maybe, you know, you see all of a sudden the guy's in a three technique on your outside shoulder as a guard, and you've got a power to that side call, and he shifts pre-snap. You don't have time to make the call. Like, if you've been playing together long enough, you automatically know what to do. You know, if you were going to double team up to the backer, now it means one guy hooks him and the other guy goes straight up. Like, once you've been playing together long enough, you automatically know what to do with that without having to say, you know, call, like ours used to be, we would call slip or ace. Just, I mean, depending on whatever the blocking scheme was. So instead of having to call it out when there's not enough time, you automatically know. And then the other place that comes into the gelling part comes in a lot of times is in – this is kind of a big deal – is in pass protection. And coming into
my sister, everyone. Maddie Deal here.
Jake's over here getting hugs from his sister. What were we talking about? Oh, gelling. Yeah, no,
she didn't run off to the bathroom again in the middle of the show. Ask me a question about basketball. I have no idea. Brett takes off the middle of the show.
But the other thing is in blitz pickup.
Yeah.
So when they start bringing guys in where there's more than you can block, knowing who's getting who, and then when the defensive line runs games. So, you know, the defense tackling the defensive end run a stunt. And if you ever – well, you guys don't get to watch practice anymore. But that's something that they always work on is, you know, where the defense tackle go and the defensive end loops and how you pass that off and just knowing how your guys work together. I mean, that goes a long way. So
That's one of the things when you were talking about the freshman playing, I was thinking – I was going to mention you – everybody that's played offensive line has practiced against twists and stunts.
Yes.
But when you see someone like Trenton Thompson and Jonathan Ledbetter do it.
Yeah.
You know – with that speed, at that size, you know, when Julian Rochester,
right,
you know, you've called him the dancing bear numerous times. When you see that guy take two steps, and it's not like when he does that stunt, he has to, you know, run around.
He's already there, and he's on a different guy.
And it's like, you know, by the time you've analyzed it, he's already, and he's 330 pounds coming. Well, he's lighter now.
He is, actually.
He looks good. That makes a lot more sense for people to say, look, you know, when you're playing those freshmen out there against guys like Richardson at Tennessee, when you're like, he lines up against me, but then he's all of a sudden he's two spots over going through the C gap, you know.
And just not knowing what to do. Like, if you hesitate, you get dominated.
Sure.
On the offensive line in particular, like, hesitation will kill you. So you got to, you know, pop out of your stance, know where to go, and immediately execute what you're doing. And without it, this defense line would just destroy you.
Great question here. Brent Tucker comes in and says, thoughts on Ben Cleveland running with the ones. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about Ben. He's a guy that, you know, he started off his career. People thought he was going to end up at a guard spot.
Right.
Georgia coaches decided to move him out to tackle. They've kind of left him out there. And it looks like he's sort of, you know, taken that in and has gotten it, you know, together, I guess, out there.
So, I look at Ben, I think me and him should be boys.
Yeah.
Right? He wears camouflage hats.
Country is cornbread.
He's country. Like, I think we should be boys.
Ben, call Russ Tanner.
Hook it up. Probably not NCAA will get us, but, you know. Hook it up. You know, but, like, Ben was like a guy last year, like, and I've said this, so I'll say it, here it is. Here's the thing that last year with Ben I watched that just drove me nuts. He redshirted last year, which is fine. I redshirted my first year. Most offense linemen do. During the games, when everybody else was out there playing, Ben was standing on the back of the bleachers with, you know, some of your scrub crew. back there waving towels, pumping the crowd up. And it drove me nuts. I'm like, dude, get in there and follow Pittman around. Go down there and talk to Isaiah Wynn. Follow Greg Pike. Listen to Cubano. And I was like, is he going to mentally be there? Because he's the biggest, strongest freaking ox they got.
Sure.
Okay? There's a lot of specimens over there. Ain't nobody as strong as that cat. I'm going to tell you right now. But watching the other day, just the way he moves, having a little bit of intentionality about what he does, you know, you got to realize being Cleveland was a freaking baby when he came in.
He was 17, wasn't he? Yeah, he was.
There's a lot of difference between being a 17-year-old fresh out of high school and, you know, starting to be a 19, 20-year-old man who, you know, starts to realize you better go. So,
and this is, and not to sound creepy, but I actually think I know when his birthday is. I know it's late August, like 20-something, because his dad, when I interviewed him when he was, like, I think in ninth grade, and we interviewed, his dad was on the phone at the same time because he's like, wait a minute, you want to interview my son who's like 14? And I'm like, I really don't want to.
But I got to.
This kid is, you know, and he was used to it because the people were taking pictures of Ben in sixth grade when he was playing first base and everyone thought he was, you know, 19. So he's used to it. Dabo Swinney coming to see him, you know, in a baseball tournament in South Carolina, you know, because people at the tournament are like, Dabo, you need to come see this kid. So he's kind of used to it. But this was, he's first started getting in the media. And his dad said, look, not only is he the biggest kid by far, but he's also the youngest kid in his grade because his, I mean, he technically was like maybe one day away from being moved over.
In
it's like August 27th or something.
Yeah.
So he enrolls early. He's age 17. He doesn't turn 18 until like the week
before the first game.
Before the first game. So, I mean, I guess he'll turn 19 before this season starts.
Right.
So a lot of these kids showing up, and you think of some of the guys that have repeated a grade, you know, some of these kindergarten red shirts, you know.
They're 21 years old.
That are showing up with kids and wives and families, you know. He's kind of the opposite end of that.
Absolutely.
So he saw him working that 700 pounds the other day, like it was no big deal.
So like, you'll see being mature.
Yeah.
You know, I think that learning, being as big and strong and fast, but you've got to learn to bend. You know, if you can't bend in your hips, you can't play offensive line.
Which
talking to people around the program, though, that's something he's really worked hard on.
Yeah. You know, I've heard yoga is involved. I mean, I've heard he's taking a number.
Think about a guy like that play with us, Dennis Rowland. You know, Dennis, when we first got here, Dennis wasn't the physical freak that being Cleveland is. Now, he was 6'9", which helps.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at Dennis the first year or two, and everybody would say, hey, Deacon, we called him Deacon. So, Deacon ain't going to make it. You know, look at him. And he went on to have one of the longest NFL careers because he worked. He was one of the hardest working dudes we were around and wanted to. And I think you're going to see some of that out of Ben.
And he's coaching now.
Yeah, Deke is. Yeah, that's right.
I love it.
Yep.
At North Oconee. You're learning from Roland. That's just fantastic.
Yeah, no, Ben, I think, like you said, it's a maturity process. I think it was tough for him, you know, and I don't know if you had to go through this in your career, but they, like I said, they kind of bounced in between spots, and that's how difficult is that to come back from, I think.
Look, man, your head is spinning. It's like a top when you get there anyway.
Yeah.
Right, Ben, left guard. Okay. All right, Ben, right tackle. Okay. Hey, Ben, we don't tackle people on offense. Okay. You know, so much gets thrown at you.
Yeah,
and, you know, it'll slow down. He'll figure it out. And he's big enough, strong enough, athletic enough. You'll see him make an impact here before he's gone. I hope it's this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brian Buford asked, tell us more about Prime Lending. This is your chance to work in a little commercial.
Hey, there it is. AthensLender.com. Mortgages for all your needs. Brian's my boy, by the way. Appreciate it.
What are you up to now?
I'm in the mortgage business. Live in Bishop, just south of Watkinsville. Been doing mortgages for 11 years. The only job I've ever had. And, you know, married my wife, Shelly, is at home. We've got three kids. Carly is in third grade, and then Rhett and Maddox are kindergarten and pre-K. So, man, it's busy at the Tanner house.
I can't imagine that house.
We got a dog, a donkey, four goats, and five chickens.
The whole thing sounds like a goat rodeo.
That just kind of sounds like what they're eating this weekend.
Yeah.
We had a goat race at our house on 4th of July.
All right.
I'm just telling you, awesome. It was pretty awesome.
Hey, everybody, come out. I think you want to charge $5 to watch a goat race?
Next year.
Yes.
We're going to blow it up.
People, Jake, they're freaking out about your beard, man. What are we going
to
do?
No, I know.
I want to talk to you about the guy switching to center real quick.
Okay.
All right. Nick Jones switched, didn't he?
Yeah, he played guard.
Yeah, guard and moved over that year. We saw Brandon move over. He'd never played, you know, until he never even played in high school, I don't think. And wound up being Georgia's starting center.
He drove me crazy, by the way, because he shotgun snapped left-handed and under center snapped right-handed. Drove me nuts.
I did not even realize that he was doing that.
Are you serious?
I couldn't even watch him play. It messed me up.
Oh, my God.
My OCD-ness messed me up.
That's a...
Because, you know,
go back and watch. I'm telling you right now.
All they talk about is ball security, and I'm thinking about snapping with my left hand. Oh, no, yeah.
Go back and watch. I'm telling you right now.
I remember he said I couldn't get the snaps right, so I watched a YouTube video, and then I got it just like that.
Yeah, anyway.
Center conversion. Center back conversion. On track.
Lamont Gilliard switching over.
Yes.
It seems to me like for a guy that has to call out the protections.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people don't understand what it is. So kind of give us what that job does.
Right.
What do you think of Lamont Gilliard making the switch? Because we know he's a good guard.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is it more important to keep him a guard or move him to center? Yeah. Should somebody else be looking at it?
Hey, they're paying Coach Pittman a lot of money to make that decision. You know, and it's hard. I mean, even, you know, in the one practice I've got to see, you don't know enough to teach those guys every day over a long period of time to know if it makes sense leaving him a guard or moving to center. You know,
Gary, what are the challenges?
Center's different. So, for me, I didn't like playing guard because at guard you had more space between you and the defensive lineman. Because you're back a foot. And at center, you know, you smell the dude's breath. Like, homie, you probably need to, you know, Listerine that thing.
Yeah, tic-tac.
So, I just got used to playing with a guy right on me. And I didn't like moving the guard when I had to do that some. So, you have to get used to just literally the physical, what you have to do, the mechanics of your hands and your feet and snapping the ball and listening and, you know. And then, like you said, you got set protection. So, you know, we always see
him
go up
there.
Explain
that to people because, you know, you'd see the guy sitting down. See you, Dusty Dog. You see these guys, they get over the ball, you know, and, of course, you know, people forget the minute you touch it, you can't pop back up again.
Sure.
So they're in that crouch the whole time. They squat down. They're pointing. Then they're pointing again, and then things are changing. And, of course, the minute he's done pointing, everything shifts.
Right.
Kind of explain what's going on there.
So I'll go back to when I played because that's what I can talk about. And no, because I don't know what to do now. But, you know, typically with your five offensive linemen, you know, you're responsible for a certain five guys. Yeah. And typically, like in your base protection for us, it was the four down linemen and the Mike linebacker.
Right.
So depending on where they lined up, especially with the way that defense is getting more and more exotic, you may not have three traditional linebackers over the tackle, the center, and the tackle, where we want them to be lined up. They're all over the place. So, you know, let's say we were playing, you know, who was the linebacker we played against? I don't even remember. Playing against LSU and number 50 was their Mike linebacker. We decided to start the week that's the guy we're designating Mike. Wherever he lines up, we call him. So if he's over right tackle, that means we got the four down lineman and that guy. If he lines up over here, the four down lineman and that guy. And the center is the one who decides who we're blocking as the mic. So why is that important? Because if the center says he's the mic, that means the offensive line's got him. If the strong side linebacker, the Sam, comes, somebody else has his responsibility. If the weak side linebacker, the Will, comes, another guy has that responsibility. And it all gets based off of who the center calls out as the mic. If the center says Phil Fulmer's the mic, well, by God, we're blocking Phil Fulmer on the field. So that's kind of what happens.
Sure.
So everybody listens to that, and you've got to know right there that's who sets – that sets every domino in motion about who's blocking who in the case that a blitz comes. Because they just bring four, whatever, la-di-da, we'll block them. But when some people start coming, which they like to come, it determines who picks them up when they hit the line of scrimmage. So the center's got to call that out and do it quickly and do it correctly. Because if you don't call it out correctly and two guys come through the right side and you only got accounted for one of them, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So basically, it's not just for the offensive lineman.
No.
You got a tight end out there who's hearing, you know, the designation, the running back, you know, if he's got a block a responsibility on that play, then he's got to know it. I'm assuming sometimes the wide receivers, you know.
Wide receiver is very important for the quarterback because they throw hot off of an unblocked guy because the defense can bring more guys than you can block.
Right.
So what's a hot route mean? It's not just wedding crashers going hot route. You know, it's not just that. Hot route means if you call, you know, we're hot off the corner and he blitzes, that means ain't nobody blocking him.
Right.
So you better throw the freaking ball or else you're gonna get ear holed.
Sure.
Speaking of quarterbacks, what do you expect out of Jacob Eason this year? You've seen guys go from year one. You've seen guys go from year one to year two and the big.
I think you'll see him make a big jump. You know, I love Jake Fromm. I've got a chance to meet him just around the building some. Love him as a kid. You know, he's just a leader. He kind of exudes it when you're around him. But he's not going to be Eason out this year unless something happens with Eason. After playing offensive line, quarterbacks rather too, it's really, really hard to play as a true freshman.
Yeah.
They're so fast. The defenses are. They're so complicated. There's so much changing. And you've got to know what to do. The playbook is not three pages long. You know, it's crazy. So, Eason, I mean, he could throw the ball from here to Statham.
Sure.
I mean, that's not a problem.
Sure.
And he could do that last year. But knowing when to get rid of the ball, knowing where to go with the ball, and to do it quickly is the most important thing. And just a year in the system makes all the difference in the world. And just quite honestly, having Fromm there, and I saw the video of Eason this past week, and they asked him about how's the competition with Fromm, and he gave a great answer. You know, hey, everybody's competing, but he feels it. You know, you see Fromm come in, you know that he's a baller, you know he's a leader, you know he's going to play hard, and that pushes him, and that's important. So once you see him get pushed through competition and just knowing what to do, you'll see him take big steps.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here, though, but do you not think that he was pushed last year with Grayson Lambert and Bryce Ramsey nipping at him?
No.
Okay.
I mean, because you kind of had known commodities with those guys.
Right. Yeah.
You'd watch them play a little bit, and I'm not trying to demean them. They're dang good dogs who we're glad they were here, and they did a lot of great things, and Bryce is still doing good things. We're really lucky Bryce stuck around this year.
Absolutely.
We're really lucky.
I think we did 30 minutes on the show about how it's like, Bryce, thanks for coming back.
It says a lot about the kid, too. I'm glad he's here.
Absolutely.
But you've seen those guys play. So you kind of knew already going into last season that you weren't going to win the SEC. Right. Even, you know, us fans who want to win every year, we knew, all right, we ain't going to win this year. Put the pup in. Yeah. It's his show. Let's see what he's got. Let's let him learn. Let's see him get hit upside the head and learn what he's doing in the heat of battle. So, you know, he was pushed a little bit, but not a ton.
Well, and I told people, you know, people would ask me where I thought he was last year. From watching Jacob Eason last year, I think the most important thing he did last year, he didn't lose you any games as a freshman quarterback. He never made a bonehead decision that made me say, this kid's totally
pull him out.
Yeah, get rid of him.
I think the thing you got to see Eason do is he's just got to make the simple throws, man. I mean, so many times last year, he just wouldn't make the simple throw. Or he'd miss a guy, you know, a back out in the flat. Chubb's out there wide open, get it to him, he'll go 7 yards and move the sticks.
Yep.
You know, he just didn't understand his check downs. He didn't understand, you know, going through your progressions and finding your third wide receiver in the route. You know, because if you line up, you may be supposed to throw the ball. In a perfect world, it goes Godwin first, Nauta second, Chubb third. If Godwin's covered and Nauta's covered, your name is not DJ Shockley. Don't try to outrun people. Find Chubb and give him the ball.
Or you look at Nauta go,
okay, maybe.
I can squeeze it in there. I think that was part of it is he's so talented, you know, and where he comes from is like, okay, what he considers covered and what we would consider covered are two separate things.
Right.
Because he's like, I can make it. You know, I can make
– And it was easy to do when you're in Lake Stevens, Washington.
That's what I was about to say.
Against some scrubby dubs. Ain't many SEC defensive backs playing in Lake Stevens, Washington.
But when you look at, you know, the those fleet-footed running backs, Auburn's always has the best coverage backs in this league, it seems, you know. Those guys are covering your tight end. You're like, you know, Nods is always open. Maybe not.
Maybe
you know?
Not.
Because, he's 2 yards behind him. But guess what? He's 2 yards behind him on purpose.
Yeah,
they're
baiting him.
They're like, well, look, your tight end's open. No, he's not. Throw it to him. Throw it to him. So I think, you know, a year of maturity will do that. Actually brings up a good question from Don. He says, Russ, do you think Georgia's offense is at a disadvantage because they don't have the threat of a running quarterback? You mentioned, you know, him taking off. And that kind of that's all the talk about
that's
going
a,
forward.
That's a veiled recruiting question is what that is.
Yeah,
they're asking about Justin Fields.
Yeah.
But Don, we know what you did. You're not fooling anybody.
Do you think that affects it, though? I mean, do you think that puts George at a disadvantage?
No, because you schemed to what you got.
Yeah.
I mean, he's super talented, you know, and there's no such thing as a perfect quarterback, you know, and if you go back and look at the last 10, 15 years of national championship.
Wait, Steve Barkowski was a perfect quarterback. Come on.
Okay.
Now. Childhood hero. Come on.
moving along. John Elway, personally, but whatever. If you look at it, there's still a whole lot of pocket passers
that
win national championships. You know, people like to look at last year. Look at Deshaun Watson. Clemson's changed the game. Okay. Keep going back and find me the next one. People say Jameis Winston. Jameis wasn't a fleet
quarterback. He was not.
He's a pocket
People
passer.
Make that mistake, and you're right, exactly.
So, I mean, you play with what you got. Your guys learn what to do, and you scheme around that. You block around it. You give him options there. If you got a guy that can run, maybe you put some things in there for that, but you give up something else. I mean, there's no such thing as a play that doesn't have a trade-off.
Right.
You make the decision what you think is going to be executed well. So I don't think it puts him at a disadvantage. If you got a guy that can run, you put a little bit different thing in there. We did it with Greeny and Shock. I mean, we had two different guys that had different skill sets. And call plays
but
a little
it also
bit
drives me crazy. You know, people are like, well, put in the running quarterback, DJ Shockley. DJ could stand in the pocket.
Yeah,
and
DJ
deliver.
Was as talented of a pocket passer as Georgia's ever had.
That just drives me crazy. And, you know, he always says, oh, well, you know, I was a dual threat. But, you know, when you talk to him, when he turns the camera off, he's like, you know, I could throw the damn ball.
Yeah, he could. Really, really
he's
good.
Like, I wasn't Mike Vick. You know, I could actually sit stand there and throw. And he does, you know, and guys like DJ Shockley are very rare. You know, guys like – I think Justin Fields could be one. You know, a guy who could stand in the pocket, deliver it. And then if he has to, he's going to take off. And, you know, good luck catching
But, you know, if you cannot be a quarterback of this caliber without first believing in that arm.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's
yeah.
there's no doubt about that in my yeah. mind. And Justin, I guarantee you, would be the first guy to tell you, hey, I'm going to my arm first
yeah.
and then my legs.
Why the hell should I run it, take a chance on getting killed by some of these idiots out there, and all of a sudden, when I know I can make that throw.
There you go.
So.
Good question here. Matthew Daniel says, your funniest or best David Green memory in a game that you guys played together?
Now, I know exactly what it is.
Are you trying to figure out a format?
Yes.
Wait, do we have to tell the paper earmuffs over your
yes.
head?
Yeah,
the
I can't.
Kids are watching?
I won't say the word. I will not say the word because Greeny, you know, he's a great family man.
He's
know.
A good guy, too.
Yeah. But we were playing in Clemson in the Death – was it 03 played in Clemson in Death Valley?
Was that what it was like 9,000 degrees?
Yes.
God, I hated that game.
It was the hottest game
I hated you guys. I hated everybody.
It was the hottest
game. I think I kicked my dog when I came back from that
game. It was the hottest
game
of my life. So I just – you know, Greeny's pretty – he's pretty calm, pretty quiet. He was never the rah-rah guy, never real loud. You know, he was a great leader, and he was vocal, but he wasn't loud with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, never really bragged or said anything. And he made a throw. It was like a 20-yard out, just threaded the needle. I mean, just a beautiful throw. NFL caliber, great throw. And we come back in the huddle and say, boys, I just threw the that ball.
We're all like, what did he say?
He knew it, though. He was
yeah.
feeling it.
Something about a duck.
I don't know. Yeah, I think y'all won that game pretty handily.
We beat the crap out of them.
Yeah. And I remember going into it, everyone was like, oh, Clemson's going to pull this out. You're coming to Death Valley. What, 31-0?
30-3, I think.
30-3. I mean, it was.
I don't know what it was. We beat the crap out of them.
Yeah, it was. But it was nine different shades of hell at that game.
It was miserable.
I getting off of or transitioning, I guess, to fan day, that's probably something we should touch on. It was the full open practice we got to see the other day. We got a question from Will Walker. He says, the talk around Swift sounds like he's going to be another great one. If you were out at fan day on Saturday, you got a chance to watch him. Man, it was Jarvis Wilson. No, it wasn't just somebody. It was a third-year safety, and he kind of laid that kid flat on his back. And it was one of the things. Now, if you were not familiar with his game, then that probably seemed like, whoa. But that's something that we've seen from him consistently throughout his high school career, a guy who relishes contact. Your thoughts on what you saw from Swift this
weekend?
Well,
to be fair, when you look at DeAndre Swift, I mean, I think – do they have him listed 5'10"?
He's 5'9".
I saw 5'9".
Yeah, so he's 5'9". He's not the biggest guy, and he's got kind of a baby face.
He does.
When you look at Zamir White, you're like, that's a dangerous man.
Yeah.
You know? Todd Gurley looked dangerous. Nick Chubb looks serious.
DeAndre Swift smiles a lot.
He smiles too much, and the beard he has, he looks nice. So you're like, kind of short guy. Very muscular, you know, baby face. And then he gets the ball in his hands, and he turns into an asshole. I mean, he just runs you over.
That's
I mean, and then we saw him at the I'm trying to remember that All-Star
game. He was at Rebels 5-Star Challenge.
Yeah, he was a challenge of killing people, but then he was also in some American game, I think so.
He was at the Army All-American game.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's just tearing people apart, and everyone's like, oh, well, we got Nick Chubb and Brian Herrien and Elijah Holyfield. I'm like, and, you know, then the Zamir White commits. I'm like, y'all better not pass on Swift.
Yeah.
This is a guy who came down, and Mark Webb, too.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
His cousin who came down from Philadelphia. Yeah, I understand. It's Philadelphia. It's not coming out of South Florida, not coming out of Miami, you know, not coming out of Jacksonville. People don't get too caught up about Philadelphia, but those two guys were here compared to the rest of the competition in Philadelphia. Yeah. So,
and I will say, I talked to when I was talking to a coach for Akil Crumpton, who most people may not know, he's from Philadelphia originally.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke to one of his coaches out at LA Valley, and he said, this is a guy from Philadelphia. And he said, and I know probably not a lot of Georgia fans know about this.
He was
like, but the way that they play football in Philadelphia is nose to the grindstone, just beat the hell out of each other football. Yeah. I mean, it's a brutal league up there. Now, you know, no matter what you think about the talent level, there's no question that those kids are getting beat up. And DeAndre Swift, though, people forget – it wasn't just that in Philadelphia. We didn't just see it in Philadelphia. He came to the Rivals 5-Star Challenge. We saw him at the opening. We saw him at the Army All-American game. All three of those settings dominated.
Didn't he play with Notori and Justin on that? I thought it was like some Team USA.
Oh, Team USA. Yeah, he did. He did play. Yeah, he was running back for that.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what I was trying to remember. I'm like, you know, we knew his accolades. We went, okay, this kid's pretty good. And then we saw him going up against some of the other best players in the nation. I'm like, you know, if I'm the coach of that team, I got this. I'm going to pitch it to him. I'm going to throw it to him. I'm going to hand it to him. I'm going to direct snap it to him. He's going to be Bugs Bunny. He's going to get the ball, then throw it to himself.
There you go. And you know, unfortunately, like Swift and Webb, those guys are at positions that can make an impact as a freshman.
Sure.
Because I'm not saying you ain't got to be smart to play those positions, but you can line up like, hey, kid, go right.
Outrun that guy.
And there's a lot of natural ability there. You know, and there's always kids that come in. We always get excited about freshmen, right?
Like, sure.
It's going to be the guy right here.
Well, we got a question about the freshmen on here. There's like 10 of them, so but please.
Oh, just to the point, though. Those guys, a lot of times, like you guys who cover recruiting a lot more thoroughly than us fans, like, we got another four-star. Like, you see guys, I remember when Noshawn Moreno came in. I had people tell me that saw Noshawn in high school, then during summer work, I was like, I'm just telling you, this kid's different. And so you can tell some of that, and Swift maybe has a little bit of that in him. So
I think I told people, you know, we're doing a series over at UGASports.com called Freshman Orientation, catching everybody up on the new additions to the team. I legitimately thought that DeAndre Swift deserved number one overall running back consideration.
Yeah.
What? I get why he
in that class?
Yes, I get why he didn't get it. Now, he was third, and he was the first non-five star in the whole class. I get why he didn't get it. The other two guys ahead of him have the more desirable frame, Cam Akers and Najee Harris. Najee Harris looks like a linebacker playing running back. Cam Akers played quarterback for his high school team and did it all.
Jalen Hurd looked better than Nick Chubb.
Yeah. Oh, you're opening some wounds that you don't even know about, my friend. But yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was a kid who, every time I saw them in those big stage games, there was no gap. I mean, there was no gap in performance. You couldn't tell that Najee Harris was doing it and DeAndre Swift wasn't. It was those guys were neck and neck.
But to my point earlier, when you look at Najee Harris, I mean. We had this camp, and there's all these coaches out there teaching them up. And that's a good thing about the Rivals camps. We don't charge people to come to them. And if you do really well, we invite you to the five-star challenge where we actually fly you. Did we fly him to Baltimore?
No, he flew to Atlanta.
Okay, so he's in Atlanta. So we fly all these kids from around the country to Atlanta. This year we flew them all to Indianapolis, and we have professional coaches out there teaching these kids how to play. And you saw Najee Harris out there who winds up going to Alabama, right?
Yes.
People are asking for his autograph.
Yeah.
Coaches. They're like, this kid's going to be something. Yeah, make it out to eBay.
It was clear. I mean, to see him.
And then Cam Akers, you're standing around him for 5 minutes. You're like, this guy's you could just feel it. He's an absolute star.
Monster.
You know, and
Swift is more understated.
But Swift is understated. But again, when you look at those two guys, it's easy to put Swift third because they have that look. Again, they're 2 inches taller.
Exactly.
In Najee's case, about 5 inches
taller.
Frame. You know, they just look badass, and there's that.
Swift's commitment video was on point, though.
That was, dude. The Rocky? You got to love the shout-out.
Give him some.
Philly's favorite son. That's what I said. And I will say.
How Mark did his. He goes, yeah, I'm committed.
I did see DeAndre Swift today, actually, in practice. There was a ball. I forget who threw it, but it was well over his head. And that kid has hops, dude. He is going to be a tough dude to defend in the passing game as well.
I know you guys have questions here, but I don't want to I got to ask you this. When we were watching practice, we saw them line up their 2 tight end sets, and then they were working all the guys in the slot. And they went Terry Godwin, Akeel Crumpton, Sony Michel, DeAndre Swift, Isaac Nauta,
Brian Herrien,
and another tight end, who?
Jackson Harris.
Who, by the way, if Jackson Harris is your fourth tight end on the roster, you have a freaking loaded group of tight ends.
Yeah, that's a quite a room.
Because he's a stud.
Absolutely. When you got Charlie Warner ahead of him and Isaac Nauta and Jeb Blazevich. Jeb, who came in as a freshman, has started.
Hasn't Jeb been here 14 years?
I think it feels like it, doesn't it? Yeah.
Anyways, go ahead.
I was going to make fun of his hairline. I think he recruited
Bryce Ramsey.
Jeb's one of my favorites on the team by far. That slot position is going to go from a guy. It could go from DeAndre Swift to Isaac Nauta.
Yeah.
Like that. What do you think of that? I'm excited about it.
Matchups, man. It's all about matchups. So in the what's the name of the game on offense in college football these days? Let you guys guess here. We did not lead in this, so you may screw it up all the way. What's the name of the game on offense, the new buzz we're all trying to do? What do we think?
Oh, I don't know.
Guess.
Matchups.
Pace. right?
Sure.
Everybody wants
sure.
to play with Pace.
Oh, Pace. Sure.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So what's the idea with Pace, right? You want to get a group on the field. As long as you don't substitute out.
Just keep going.
Keep going. And then what happens is if you can keep your same group of 11 guys on there and put three, four, five different looks up against the defense, it's really hard for them to match up and do that. Yeah. If you can line Nauta up out as your X receiver out on the outside one time because you got Terry Goddard on the other side or whatever it is, and then you come right back and put him in there in a tight formation with another tight end right beside him, can run power to that side, the defense can't substitute, get another defense line. They can't go from dime to nickel to – you know, a 4-4 front. They can't do all that stuff. So whenever you can get your same group of guys on the field, line up quickly, line up in different formations, one that's pass heavy, one that's run heavy, one that's short yardage, one that's a 3rd and 7, and do all that without substituting, it puts the defense at a huge disadvantage. So what they're doing right now when you see all that is they're trying to figure out the different combinations that work and what different groupings of plays they can run with this personnel package in the game.
And I will say I've seen more of that this year than in the previous 4 years I've been covering practice. There is that group, the guys you mentioned, DeAndre Swift, Sony Michel, Brian Harrion, Jackson Harris, Isaac Nauta, Charlie Warner. They are like the Swiss Army knife group. They are guys who are doing it all. They're having them catch. They're having them block. They're having them take handoffs. I mean, it is
Charlie Warner is a 6'5", 250-pound receiver.
Yeah, yes.
What? You know, we always talk about the guys that Georgia's recruiting that are 6'1", 6', 185 pounds, who play offense or defense. You know, we call them athletes. I think, what did Georgia sign? 4 technical athletes last year?
Yeah, something like that.
D'Angelo Gibbs was one, you know. Did we have Latavius Brenny down as one?
I think he was actually a DB. Okay. But Trey Blunt ended up being one.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Holloman. Matt Landers, I believe, was one. Bishop was definitely one.
So all these guys are considered athletes. And, you know, you don't see anybody in that 6'5", 230-pound range listed as an athlete. But he's a jumbo athlete. And I really think that I want to say that, yeah, Charlie Warner's going to have a great year. But how do you get him the ball when Isaac Nauta is probably going to, be an All-American. And you've got Nick Chubb to give the ball to, Sony Michel to give it to. You want to throw it to Terry Godwin, who's a playmaker. Riley Ridley out there. Javon Wims, I'm like, in other words, I think as much as I'm talking about Charlie Warner, and I think he's going to be great, he's so far down the line of guys to give it to. So, I mean, Georgia's got all these great options. But
what all these guys – in
other words, I hope people give him a chance because
– Yeah. What all these guys know, though, is that there may not be as many, you know, chicken wings on the plate, but when that plate comes around, you better grab it and eat.
Absolutely.
Point
Absolutely.
Is, when your number gets called, do something.
Yeah, well, Charlie will do something with it because – he's a badass.
I'm going to tell you guys this too. If you haven't seen it, go back. It's on YouTube. You can watch Charlie Warner high school career highlights. And it's from 9th to 12th grade. I don't know who curated this thing. It is one of the coolest films I've ever watched. And I've watched a lot of film at this point. That is a really, really fun thing to watch. That kid can literally do everything.
We got to talk a little bit of defense here. Well, one person wants your Pete Ellis says, what's your record prediction for this year?
I have no idea. I mean, you know, I think
I'm not doing one this year.
Yeah, I don't do it either. I don't like doing it. Sorry, Pete. It makes for bad TV.
No, it's fine.
You know, I mean, I think the team. I mean, quite honestly, if you look at the schedule, how it lays out, if they don't win 10 games, I think it's a disappointment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think if they're 8-9 wins again, there's people saying, all right, boys, need to do something here.
That's an issue. I agree with you.
So,
my problem is, and I would always do a prediction, and sometimes I'd get it, sometimes I wouldn't. And I don't mind being held to the fire. You know, you were wrong. My problem is right now, I love Georgia's defense. You know, it's thin.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of depth there. And I think Kirby was talking about in the press conference today. He said, with our defensive backs, we have these experienced guys, you know, over here with your, you know, Dominic Sanders and Aaron Davis and guys like that who've played a lot. And then we've got our freshmen.
And then there's nobody in the middle.
Gibbs, Amir Speed.
There's nobody in the middle.
All these young guys. Where's your guy that was –
And you want to talk about
like 3 years.
I'll tell you where those guys are. They transferred.
They all transferred.
Rico McGraw, Kirby Choates, Jack Wilson. I mean, those guys are gone. Yeah. So, yeah.
You talk about what will make Kirby lose his hair faster than anything else? Put freshman defensive backs in the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
He'll lose his mind. And, yeah, you want him to get that experience, but it scares me to death. But, anyway, I'm even though with the shallow depth on defense, I like Georgia's defense. Love his running backs. Love his tight ends. Even happier with the wide receivers. I think the quarterback's going to be better, but I don't know about the offensive line.
Yep.
And as you will know, if you don't have a productive offensive line, how the hell can you predict the outcome of the season?
You can't.
So
yeah, they may be great.
If I knew what the offensive line was, I'd be fine predicting 4 or 5 wins, losses, whatever. So, So Matt Jerley says, Russ, I have a single wide and winder. Can you refinance that thing into a 40-year?
Yes, I know Matt well, and he does not have enough money to buy a single wide and winder.
Oof.
Oh, Matt, brutal. Don't mess with the bull if you don't want the horns.
Brutal.
Ball-headed joker.
Talk to me a little bit about what you saw on defense. Again, I don't want you to give away the story, but
talk
to
us about the defense. Well, I didn't watch that defense to tell you. They're fast. I mean, that's the thing that you watch out and that you stand out, which it's always funny to me this time of year because it's like whenever you bring in a new strength coach, nobody ever says, I mean, this guy takes it easier on us than the year before.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Nobody, and when the new defense comes in, like, nobody ever says, hey, we're really dialing back the aggression this year. we're putting that bend but don't break in.
Yeah.
So, we all think about, oh, they're aggressive, they're fast, but – I mean, that's what they're recruiting. They're recruiting guys that can really move, that are versatile, and that can play a lot of different positions. Back to the point about offense with the whole pace thing, that's what you have to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
So having to recruit that now, guys that can play star, that can play corner, that can play safety, that can come down to a linebacker position. So you see guys that are fast. You got guys like Roquan Smith who have a chance to really be a star.
Yep.
That have been really good, had a little bit of injury bug here or there, but if they come in and can stay healthy, can absolutely be a star on this defense. You're talking about linebackers in the vein of Odell Thurman, Alec Ogletree, some of these great ones Georgia had in the past. You've got guys that can really step up and be great for them. And I think you're going to see the defense have the whole aggression thing will come more into play just from them being comfortable with what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like if you don't know when to blitz and what to do and how to react, there's no point in blitzing.
I think it was Sean Williams. If I'm, I hate it if I'm wrong, and I'm sorry if I am. Talking for Sean from one year to the next, he just kind of blew up, senior season. And I'm like, this wasn't even on the record. I'm like, Sean, what happened between this year and last year? Because last year you weren't Sean Williams. He's like, he goes, I know what I'm doing now.
Know what I'm doing.
And I'm like,
he says, in the world.
He said, I think he forgot my name at the time. But he's like, if I'd known this last year, I could have had the same season.
Yeah.
He says, it was a very candid thing, and I'm sorry for putting it out there years later, but he was very honest. He said, I didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say he didn't feel comfortable, but he had to think about it.
Sure.
And now those calls to him in that senior year, he was making most of them, He's like, it was instinct and reaction, and he knew what was going on. And you saw when he got so comfortable, Sean was just destroying everybody. That's why he went to the NFL.
So
you know?
Much faster.
Yeah.
They hit people so much harder
because
they just go. It's like blood in the water. Yeah. Sharks attack instead of sitting back and thinking about it. They just go. And hopefully you're going to see more of that out of those guys this year.
Well, it's like when Georgia picked up that safety last year. Everybody knew what was going to happen on the play. They pinned their ears back. They come, and it's like, especially when you don't have to worry about, you're an outside linebacker. Do I have to follow this kid into coverage? I got the green light to just come in. Especially even on a blitz, especially those cornerback blitzes, when those guys come in off the edge, they come in like their hair's on fire because they're like, I don't have any responsibilities other than getting to this guy and come flying in.
Yep.
And then some don't left tackle's got to let everybody know he's coming.
Yeah, and then – exactly. Look out! and then the other part, too, is it helps with the coaches. You've got another year with your guys to know what you can do.
Sure.
You may look back last year and think, well – golly, we better not put Jake Roussey in on 3rd and 8 again. He can't cover crap.
Yes.
Put him in on 1st down.
Do not put me in on 3rd and 8.
Well, that was a good question. Wes Blankenship at 11 Live Sports brought this up. He said, this is Nick Chubb's first time with the same offensive coordinator 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think of that. Yeah. I'm like, oh, crap, he's right. And I like to your point about playing with pace, when you have Jim Chaney, we saw a lot of 2 tight end sets. And when you have somebody as versatile as Isaac Nauta and Charlie Warner out there at the same time, you're moving Charlie up in the H-back, and you're splitting Isaac out wide, then you bring them both in for a power run, and then all of a sudden they're both out, and Terry Godwin's in that little slot position. That all of a sudden, I see your point about saying, hey, look, we can throw so many different looks at you, especially on a sustained drive. By the time, they're over on the sideline, they still use iPads now, or is it all printed out screens? Because you watch the other teams, and they're all trying to point out what's going on. When they have to flip through 40 different screens because you ran 40 different formations, it's tough.
Well, and you mentioned that consistency. You know, going back to the offensive line, Russ, how important do you think it will be for those guys? Because this is the first time they've had 2 years under the same coach, let alone in the same offense. I mean, Sam Pittman's the first guy they've seen for 2 years.
Man, it's huge. I mean, it really is. And Pittman, watching him, like, he really is a teacher, you know, out there. He's not every good offensive line coach in the history of football has had the ability to break it off in your rear end.
Yeah, sure.
And he's got it. Don't get me wrong, Coach. I ain't saying he's soft. He's very tough. But he's a teacher.
Ask Kirkland about that. Yeah.
You can see him being really patient with some of these young kids and walk them through and teach them technique with it. But then having an understanding of what your coach expects of you is huge. Knowing when he tells you, hey, if they bring the Mickey, you got to get the Sam. And not saying, was that again? Like, just know it. Like, that's what it means.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, just knowing the lingo, because it has to get to be, you know, just like any profession. Every profession has their own set of lingo they talk about that nobody else understands. And the longer you're in it, the easier it is to talk about it. And then you just do it. It's just natural.
All right. Well, we're going to have to stop there because we could talk all night.
Yeah, we could.
At some point, you know, I'm apologizing to everybody that sent in your questions. We can't get to all of them. I was teasing about him answering all your questions, but. Will you come back?
Yeah, man.
You do know
he's already distracted by his phone.
I'm sure he's trying to refi a double wide out and wind it right now. Single wide. Excuse me. Yeah, we know he can't afford a double wide. What'd you call him? A bald something?
He's a bald. He ain't that good.
Those of us that don't have any hair, let's be nice. Anyway, we want to thank all of our friends at Athens Ford for sponsoring the show. Thank all of our friends at 11 Live for letting us use their space. Thanks to Champies for letting us come on.
Absolutely.
Your pie. Is one of our sponsors. I know you like pizza, and I know you've been to EuroPie.
Cable East.
The guys that sponsor our show for no apparent reason other than Robert's just a
fan. Just because they love it,
just for it. Just
because
they're huge Georgia fans. And so thank you to all the Georgia fans out there for sponsoring our show. Thanks, everybody, for watching it. Please be sure to like the 11 Live Facebook page. We'd really appreciate that.
Share this video with your friends if you liked what you saw today. Also, make sure to check us out on Google Play and on iTunes. We're on there as well.
And if you need mortgage work done, how can they get a hold of you?
Prime Lending, athenslender.com. That's our website.
He does have some fantastic videos on his Facebook page, too.
Oh, you know, also, with the season being close, UGA Game Day 365, you got to go ahead.
Oh, my God. See, that was the one I was trying
to
remember earlier.
I know it was.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. 365 Game Day, you got to get your gear for the opening game. You got to represent when you go up to South Bend. Go to 365 Game Day and get all your G logos, your Power Gs.
Russ Tanner was going to be up there.
Yeah, Russ, you going to the Notre Dame game?
Going to be there. me and Big Ed.
The first question we got was, do you have any eligibility left?
They don't want me, boss. I'm 6'3 and a half, 290, and real slow.
Anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in. We will talk to you next week. Take care.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.